You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. Man, I've always really loved smart, funny, acerbic women. And I gotta tell you, Molly Ivins is like the queen of the world when it comes to those definitions. Always was. I was lucky enough to see her and Jim Hightower on stage together going back and forth in Austin, like, I don't know, like 15 years ago or something. It was like, this is like so brilliant and so like, just like, on point, and very much for the super liberal that I am, that I was like, I think I even cried a little bit watching it. So I remember being very sad when Molly Ivins, who a lot of you out there may not actually be familiar with, which is a shame, when she died in 2007. She was a legend, close friends with Texas Governor Ann Richards, who we all love, who I actually got to meet and be in a commercial with. Just saying.
I know which one you
mean. Was it the Doritos one?
It was the Alamo one.
Oh, yeah.
I remember never talking to her, but just seeing her without an entourage at the Village back when it was an art house theater before the Alamo bought it out. You just see her show up and watch a movie like anybody else.
Yep.
And you had that weird moment of like, hey, that's a, is that? Oh, that's who I think it is. It's the ex-governor, and it's a governor I don't hate. But what a nice, wonderful feeling.
But Ivins, as Richards regularly copped to, was a legend. Like, there may not be an Ann Richards without Molly Ivins, who was a complete firebrand of reporter. And this documentary, which I remember played at South By, and I did not get to see there, but has been since been on my list of, I've got to see this, because she is one of the funniest political writers who's ever lived. Is the Mark Twain of our time.
Yeah, certainly of Texas politics. I mean, and you really can't think of too many other people who had her breadth of knowledge, her wit, her analysis, and also being able to distill that in a way that the issues made sense to normal people and delivered with an amazingly cutting, folksy wit. I mean, she could be very polite and smile and say something that just would devastate you.
That is kind of the Texas women kind of way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you're going to be, you know, give it's a the backhanded compliment.
It's the
like,
bless his heart.
Yeah, kind bless of your heart.
Bless your heart.
Aww. Well, before we get into it, the movie's called Raise Hell, The Life and Times of Molly Ivins. Marco is here with me.
Hello.
I, of course, am Chris, and joining us is newbie Harmony. Hello.
Yay, I'm so happy to be here.
We've actually known each other for a long time, but been out of touch.
Right.
You actually were friends with one of my exes way back when.
Yeah, we worked at the same place, and she was really close with my husband.
Yeah.
In this weird Franciscus circle that we have going on now. But thank goodness for Facebook.
Yeah, you know, you got back in touch when I said, hey, I would love to get some new people on here, some new voices, some not white male hetero voices.
I tick those boxes.
I qualify. Yes.
And God knows we need new material.
Right.
We've been recycling the same jokes.
I will try my very best.
Some fresh blood.
Before we beat all the enthusiasm out of you.
Yes.
But this is basically a comedy that has a tinge of sadness to it. Like, Molly was so, she did so many interviews. A lot of the footage from this is from like C-SPAN or various events that she was speaking of. And she was one of those people that like, at a certain point of her career, everyone got that she was something incredibly special. And I don't mean just Texas. Like, the country got she was something really special.
She was nationally syndicated for a while and like at least 400 papers back when being in the newspaper kind of was a big deal.
It meant something.
It meant something. You had a readership. Now, if she were still alive today, she'd probably have a podcast or something.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, do we need her.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe that, you know, Jim Hightower's column no longer runs in the Austin Chronicle. I can't think of any better place for it.
Another acerbic Texan liberal wit.
Yeah, and a good friend of Molly Ivins and one of the many talking heads that appears in this very fine documentary. Unfortunately, she did pass away in 2007, and this is kind of a better late than never way of getting people back in the room together and say, look, let's just reminisce about this wonderful firebrand we knew. And it also makes a very strong case that she was in her own way prophetic. She didn't live to see our current era, but she seemed to already have a sense of where the country was going.
Yeah, she had. There's a lot of sound bites in here, especially later in her life, where she was predicting exactly where we are right now, where this is coming.
Yeah, I think she would be shocked. I'm shocked. Well, not that shocked.
Not that shocked. Not shocked at all.
You know,
I have her biggest readership ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of knew of Molly Ivins just being Texan born and raised as just somebody to look up to. My family is really leftist, liberal, you know, whatever adjective you want to give that. And just
communist.
See, communist. Yes, communist. Yeah.
I love that.
I've been accused.
From maybe. Everyone from the right who has no idea. What the difference is between communism, socialism, and a number of other terms.
Right. And just kind of seeing something like this that kind of shows you her beginnings and where all her travels really, you know, she was larger than life, and I think it humanized her. For me personally, because she was just, it was the great Molly Ivins, is kind of how you thought of her, and I still think of her that way. Just to see, you know, how hard she worked and how much she stuck to her own convictions, and it was a really beautiful thing to see played out on screen.
She's like that cross between the unsinkable Molly Brown and Mark Twain, right there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, she was bigger than life in more than one way, and part of that is like this goes into her past where she was growing up and she was 6'6" tall,
right?
Which obviously right off the bat is going to make you like stand out for
when
a female.
She was 12. She was already six
feet tall,
right?
Yeah.
And as they pointed out in there, one lady was like, and a massive pair of bazoombas, you know,
at
a very early age,
yeah.
Which is one of those like, okay, so you're going to be both the source of male attention and to some degree of disdain by definition of the misogyny that was inherent in going to school with a bunch of dudes who were like, she's intimidating because she's tall, but she has big boobs.
Well, I think one of the things this movie does really well is, it pulls back the curtain a little bit because we're all familiar, at least most of us, I think, are familiar with the Molly Ivins persona.
Yes.
She's the Texan wit, the great columnist who never made any pretenses towards being unbiased. She had told you exactly what she thought. But, you know, as our friends and her brother and sister kind of reveal, it's like, no, she was shy. She was bookish. She grew up in a very well-to-do, rock-ribbed Republican community in
her
Houston.
Dad, super rich oil man.
Yeah, and basically grew up in the same neighborhood as the Bushes and kind of ran in that circle, but in a way that also gave her an ability to talk about these kinds of people because she knew them. She was part of their social circle, and as we see, you know, she's Ivy League educated, you know, she
goes to Paris
to learn French and study, and then comes back, and she's worked at a lot of the prominent newspapers in the country.
I like that she points out at one point, like her own words, like there's nothing like getting out of Texas to the far other side of the world to really put a perspective on the fact that not everyone is one way. Like there's a lot of different perspectives out there, and I think that was probably pretty key to her becoming the person that she did. I mean, she was as smart as she was. She was so incredibly smart that obviously also intimidated a lot of men and certainly bosses at newspapers she was working on. But she early on decided that despite the fact of having a Ivy League master's degree in journalism, she was not interested in being someone who was just going to sit back and try to always be, if you'll excuse the term, fair and balanced, because not everything is fair and balanced.
Yeah.
Like there's, you don't have to, in fact, maybe you shouldn't report the news from a viewpoint of like, oh, we're not going to express an opinion when clearly there's deception going on.
Right, yeah.
No. Let's not criticize these people who put children in cages and stuff. I think we need to go and talk to some neo-Nazis and get their side of the story.
They're all really fine people.
So we can have a nuanced view and then let the readers decide.
No.
She drew that moral distinction. And maybe she wasn't always right on every single single issue, but I think more often than not she was. She does have a way of, and again, this is something that's been lost. When we talk about print journalism, I mean, my goodness, if she were on Twitter now, she would be rocking it. I think she's,
oh my God,
she's just the queen of the one-liner. However, really she grew up in that era of like, okay, I have to write to a deadline. I have to be sharp. I have to be funny. And yes, there are lots of other very funny comics who do political humor, but they have a writer's room. They've got like half a dozen people in that room's crafting jokes for that host based on the topics of the day. And Molly Ivins just like cracked open a six pack and then sat down at her typewriter and did it all by herself every day.
And that's part of it. She was totally, ultimately, like this ultimate Texas symbol where she talks, they talk about it a lot in here, and I really enjoy this. And I admit that maybe part of my, a portion of my enjoyment of this film is just being a Texan.
Same, or for me, this being like a Texas woman being like, yeah. You know, and kind of going back to the point about like stepping out of Texas to actually see the world, Texans have this almost unhealthy relationship with the state of Texas.
Yes.
And that it's like, you know, oh, the world's going to hell, but I'm Texan, and you know, we've always been frontiers people, which is not true. But you know, and just, but she kind of played this part of this brass and smart woman that I would love to grow up to be someday.
Oh yeah,
it's just
me too.
I mean, yeah, she's you'd be lovely in the cowboy.
She is the kind of person who you would think would just work her as hard as she could to get the hell out of Texas,
and she did. She just came back,
and the thing is, actually loves it. And here's a something that I always say that are like, friends of mine who are like, oh man, this state, it's too regressive. Yeah. I just can't live here anymore. You know,
God,
I can't
help put you it.
It's like, you know, but it's like, I should leave. It's like, no, stay.
Yeah.
Because if you all leave, then that's all this state ever is.
Yeah.
And I think she appreciated that Texas actually was far more nuanced. She could make a lot of fun of the culture and of its politicians, but the love she has for the state and its people always shines through. And as she says in one piece of archival footage to a crowd of appreciative Berkeley students, she's like, look, you know, nobody needs another fucking liberal in Berkeley.
Yeah.
You know, I can do more good in Texas.
They need me in Texas.
Yeah.
And they certainly do. And I always love the fact that she did so much, despite spending a tenure at the New York Times and then going to Denver as their literally
one of the editors of Texas Monthly.
Yeah. She ended up deciding to come back here. And really, that was the point her career became legendary when she returned to Texas and was like, I'm the Dallas Observer,
Dallas Bloor Observer,
like, with the first paper to go, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
We will publish every word you say. Yeah. And that was where she went from like one of the most outspoken original journalists that nobody knew about specifically by name to becoming a legend.
Yeah.
Right.
Who was called in to talk at things and was publishing books and really just being the Molly Ivins who is such an icon that it's hard to separate her as a human being with foibles, you know. Right. And I think this documentary also chooses to get into that a bit because those elements of being a Texan, hard drinking, hard smoking, were the things that led to her demise ultimately.
Yeah. I would say so. I mean,
it was
my imaginary doctor's degree would definitely agree with you. No, like, it showed her as fallible. Mm-hmm. It showed her, like I said, as a human being. And it seemed like a lot of it, she put on this persona of being really, you know, extroverted or really, I'm trying to think of the word, but really, you know, good in a crowd.
Yeah.
And some of the movie made me think that she was probably really sad.
Yeah.
A lot of her life as well.
Yeah.
You know, that I definitely got that, you know, that she took it all in stride as far as I could tell in the movie. But there was it's really hard to be like a an outgoing introvert. Yeah. And this is kind of how I saw her.
And like a lot of women in the era, she had to make certain sacrifices in the name of her career. Certain opportunities simply didn't exist. I mean, she says it very clearly. At one point, somebody asked her the question that every woman, professional woman, gets asked at some point. It's like, so do you ever regret not getting married, not having kids?
Nobody ever asked men that.
She's like, well, you know, what did she say? She's like, you never fuck your co-workers, your boss, or your sources, and that's everybody I knew. So I had a very small pool to choose from, and the ones who I did like never asked me. And it's a very moment where she's caught a little off guard, and you kind of see that there is some regret there. And then immediately she's back with a joke and a smile.
Yes.
But she obviously made... she made some choices to have the career that she did, and she reached a certain height until somewhere around after 9/11, where there was definitely a period of time where journalists felt very conflicted. They didn't want to be too critical. You know, the country was a crisis. You know, and she found herself many of the papers that ran her columns suddenly stopped running her. I guess she was. I guess they could say they weren't strictly censoring her because they were still paying her.
Sure.
And she was still appearing in other newspapers, but the editor could say, you know what, this topic this week is too sensitive. She's too critical of this operation we have going over right now. And, you know, people have to support the troops and not question the war and et cetera. And so they just quietly didn't run it that week.
And addressing your point, though, I think that probably 95% of all genuinely funny comedians are coming from a place of pain and depression.
Yeah.
And there's no question to me that I think of her as much a really deeply insightful, multiple Pulitzer Prize nominated person as I do a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. Because she just pulled the shit off the top of her head all the time. I mean, like, if she had chosen to go into straight comedy, she would have been a legend as well, I suspect. And this makes the most out of just how she, like, I kept going back in my head into Mark Twain, and the movie references it like three times because you can't not see it. This very culturally like part of a specific culture person who's all about commenting on politics in a wry, acerbic, I don't give a fuck way in a world where people just weren't allowed to say things, or even Roy Rogers, if you will.
She's actually, in a way, a less acerbic Ambrose Bierce and a cuddlier, less racist H.L. Mencken.
Was H.L. Mencken racist?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it kind of was.
I don't know.
God, he was so sharp and funny and so dismissive and cynical of the human race in general and the American people in particular.
Well,
that kind of cruelty doesn't come across in Ivan. She could be very cruel.
Yeah.
She loved the people. But she didn't. She wasn't a big fan of a lot of the people who were voted to do the people's work.
Yeah, she was not into the business as usual thing, and even people who she was friends with, she would call out.
Yeah.
I mean, she even, like, at one point, it was like, yeah, she knew George Bush W. She knew him, and even said, like, I kind of like the guy.
Yeah,
but
side story. I've been kissed by George W.
Really?
Yeah. My stepmother worked for him when he was governor, and I went to the Christmas party. And, like, everybody was leaning in to get cheek kisses, so I leaned into it. I was, like, 18, not knowing what I was doing. I was, like, and then later on, I was, like, that was really weird, Harmony.
Did he give you a tongue?
No. He like, missed my cheek and kissed my ear. That was it's a bit fresh, yeah.
Was it more of, like, that creepy Biden vibe?
No. It was like, transaction, like, shake your hand, lean forward, get a kiss.
At least he didn't try to grab you by the pussy.
Yes, exactly. That's the one thing I could say about
him. As awful as he was, he had some standards.
I would have expected to hand you a little bag of Coke.
No, she was a little too...
It was a party at the governor's meeting.
That was after her time.
That was fair.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go to final thoughts. Marco, get us started.
All right. Well, one of the issues I have with a lot of documentaries is that they tend not to be particularly fresh or new in their construction or aesthetic. I always try to give extra points to a documentary that looks and feels different. This movie, and make no mistake, I enjoyed the hell out of this. it does feel like a fairly bog standard, you know, video essay, the kind of thing that you might see on Good Morning America or a TV news show. You know, it's like, oh, you know, here's in memory of this person who passed away. Here's like a little 8 minutes of clips. This is a lot of contemporary talking head interviews with some really good guests, by the way.
We haven't even touched
on Dan Rather, of course, another prominent Texan politician, Dan Rather. And, you know, well, you can go on IDMB. I've had a few beers, folks. Calm down.
IBS. You can go on IBS.
You can go to that pewter. Get on your pewter. And there's a whole site. It'll tell you everybody in the damn movie. Yeah. All right? It'll tell you everyone who's ever been in the movie. But my point is there are some significant cultural, political figures from the world of journalism that are came out to talk about how much they admired Molly Ivins. But my point earlier was that this is a bunch of contemporary talking head footage, stock footage, some establishing shots and archival footage. As a documentary itself, it's kind of bland, but in any documentary is only as good as its subject matter.
Right. Yeah.
And Molly Ivins is such a great figure, so worthy of a documentary about her. And so much of what she was talking about then is there are some contemporary clips that kind of hammer home the point, like, oh, you see what's happening now? She was talking about it then.
Yeah.
It's a little manipulative, but I will give them that because, God damn it, we don't live in a world where subtlety exists anymore. this is really worth watching. I know a lot of folks will wait for it to be on Netflix or streaming or whatever, but if you get a chance, do see it in the theater if you can. If nothing else, I think you're going to really enjoy the sound of laughter that plays because it's a crowd pleaser of a documentary. I give this 9 out of 10 well-named shrubs.
Harmony, what about you?
My only concern with the movie is that how much how much reach does it have? You know, because this makes sense for somebody like me to go see this movie. Liberal female Texan,
sure. You are the target.
I'm the target audience, or at least you know I'm definitely somebody that they took into account. I thought it was funny and moving in places. I don't know how much reach it has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this very niche.
Yeah, I mean, documentaries almost by definition.
Right. Even though I'm like, I would like shake everybody I know, and unfortunately, most everybody I know is liberal, I'll be like, go see this movie. And I, you know, with Molly Ivins passing away from cancer, and I'm having to have done work with cancer in the past, it was good for them to talk about her trying to face life as it was ending because she had alcohol problems and, you know, chose to be sober during that time. And that's, you know, really, really touched me. And so what would I give this? I would probably give it about an 8 out of 10 cutting remarks.
I think that first and foremost, if you're trying to sell someone on this, mm-hmm. who is obviously you're not going to sell it to someone who's not a liberal.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I mean, it's self-reflective. There's not even really, but like maybe 2 words in here from people who aren't super liberal.
Right.
It's not asking her opponents, who yeah. I doubt would have ever even considered doing it, because when you can balance whatever they're saying versus something she said on stage or somewhere, mm-hmm. there's no way you're going to win.
Right.
She had just such an incredible way with words and was so funny. But for those of you who are liberal, this is a comedy. It's funny. It's like laugh out loud funny over and over and over again. It is a real audience pleaser of a movie. It might be because of the very nature of comedies, which are always better to see with an audience of other like-minded people. Maybe that's the way to see it. Now, maybe not if you're like in like a town that like weirdly that might get this that is not liberal at all. We live in Austin. We had a very appreciative audience. Hell, it was a press screening only.
And very small.
And people applauded at the end of it. That almost never happens.
Yeah, those hardened critics who don't give a shit about anything. Ow. Sorry, I'm being attacked by a cat.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm being personally attacked by your cat. I literally am being personally attacked by this cat.
He's a conservative.
Yeah, he's a little bit. Well, but you know, he's not socially, though.
He's not socially
it's fine.
Never.
Only fiscally.
He's fiscally conservative and socially liberal.
We need more gushy food.
Yeah. But, you know, he's got the hair-biting fetish lobby on lock. You know,
yes,
that's like...
Yes.
Small government, but let me get my freak on. That's what your cat's but platform
this
is.
This is a deeply enjoyable film. I wish it had gotten more into her personal life and mm-hmm. more into who she was as a person. I feel like to some degree it was like...
Just about her writing, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was really just focused on that. And I would have liked to know more about who she was as a human being. But maybe there's just not as much information out there. Or maybe it was a certain amount of... And I got this feeling from some of the talking heads, just sheer respect of like... She would never, she doesn't want to be represented in that way. She wants you to know her by the words she chose to write.
Right.
And that's perfectly fair. But this is a deeply enjoyable film. I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10 shots of her drinking that made it clear that if nothing else that was bad about her, she had terrible taste in beer.
But she would have been a great piece, the man said, as he drank his... third Lone Star of the evening.
Lone Star is not too... She was drinking Coors.
Coors, yeah.
That was...
She's like...
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, ugh.
Molly Ivins would have shown up for a gathering with a 12er of Lone Star or Coors, and you would have happily drunk it, and she would have been great on
it. Well, only because it was Molly Ivins.
Yeah.
Yes.